coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, 2 weeks in a row with a fairly unsurprising easy winner as John Rahm reigns supreme. We get into the action from Mexico, plus Tiger frenzy continues going into the PGA, and the ladies stayed in SoCal, and we get a brutally honest moment in the best way. Plus, we're tuned into the final season of a show and a new series on HBO Max. This week's guest, a great one, ABC, ESPN broadcaster and commentator for Holy Moly, Joe Tessitore. That's right, the voice of basically every Saturday afternoon legendary college football game you can remember is on the Course of Life. Plus, the NBA playoffs, NFL draft recap, and WADA and water when we always end with food. All of it brought to you by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, makers of the phone caddy. Another comment from another playing partner, Mike. As soon as I put that phone caddy on the golf cart on the first tee, it's an immediate head turner because people don't see them very often, but it's something you need to see more often on the golf course. You can make it yours. This easy portable phone holder keeps your phone right where you need it to be seen and locked in and safe at all times. That way it doesn't get lost or spilled on by beer in one of those crappy cupboards in your cart. So get your Desert Fox phone caddy today by going to desertfoxgolf.com and putting in our promo code COURSEOFLIFE to save yourself 10%. Again, 10% off with promo code COURSEOFLIFE at desertfoxgolf.com.
Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Tosi Snacks, and Volvic. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, it was the brand new to the PGA Tour Mexico Open this weekend passed at Vedanta. And as you kind of said it last week, they were, you know, you weren't going to put lipstick on a pig. This was John Rahm's tournament to lose.
Yes,
and he didn't. He went ahead and won it in pretty resounding fashion, wire to wire win, opening with a 64. Arguably did just enough on Sunday to secure the victory. But I think to a certain extent, it was a Cameron Champ fell apart. I didn't get my third winner of the season because of it. And that double bogey on 8 for Champ just kind of ended his chances at maybe having a good run at this and giving Rahm someone to actually play against for the win.
Yeah, it ended up being not very competitive, despite the fact he only won by one. It was just one of those things where John Rahm held the lead all week, and he held it into Sunday. And there was just nothing to have us believing that he was going to give it up. He was the prohibitive betting favorite. I know he doesn't pay much attention to that, but it was hard not to see it when the field came out and the odds were out, that this was his tournament to go ahead and win. And he took advantage on a new venue where he looked pretty comfy. He even mentioned that the greens in Arizona he was practicing on helped him a lot for that tricky two putt at 18 to get it done. But nonetheless, Rahm went down there, took care of business, kind of exactly what he needs now as he takes a couple weeks off before the PGA.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're now 3 weeks away from the PGA at Southern Hills. What do you give his very early chances here? And I know there's lines out there for it, but what do you think? Is he one of the top three that's going to be raising the trophy?
Yeah, I mean, hard, fast, brown. Like, that seems to kind of work for John Rahm. I don't know if it's Arizona or just his background in golf or the way he hits that low line drive, boring golf like, but those venues work. And, Mike, it's going to be Oklahoma in May. Like, that's gonna be sunny and warm. There's going to be some dryness out there. So why not put him on the short list of guys that can contend? I definitely got my eyes on him.
Let's talk about some of the other guys out there, because Tony Finau put up a 63. In Mexico, which was awfully good as well.
Of course he did. Mr. Second or Third coming in again. Yeah. Where we expect him. Yeah.
always. And of course, my boy Cameron Champ, as you just said, just put in, it's still a great weekend. He just, you know, I don't know.
Pick on your part. That was a good pick. He put himself into contention all week, and I'm going to watch out for him in the coming weeks as well. I'm going to back pocket that pick of yours and maybe drop him in the next couple weeks on my Twitter picks. My interesting pick on my Run Your Pool article was kind of my flyer in Davis Riley, a guy that played decently in the two-man competition at Zurich with Will Zalatoris. He ended up having a really nice week and a top 10 to his own right as well, too. So he's been popping up on leaderboards as well, but you're right. We did not get that win number 3 for either one of us. Regardless, though, the picks are weekly on Wednesday evenings on Twitter. I'm at Course of Life 1, and you're at MWRINC to follow along.
Let's talk about the LPGA. They're at Palos Verdes. And the takeaway here is Lydia Ko, because I just love this moment. I think everyone has probably seen it by now. It has taken over golf Twitter. That is Lydia Ko being asked about calling out a personal trainer mid-round.
Yes.
And she said, well, it's that time of the month and my back gets a little tight during that. And just like the brutal honesty of this, that she's telling us all, yes, it's her time of the month. She's having her period and things happen to women's bodies during that time. And she needed a little help to get through it.
Yeah.
And why aren't we normalizing this in sports and in life in general? I've told my wife plenty of times, do you need me to pick up more pads for you at the store? I don't mind.
Yeah, it's just like the human body, and like we all know it happens. It doesn't have to be this gigantic secret, and Lydia was definitely not ashamed of it. It's just, it is what it is. But hey, I had to do what I had to do to continue playing, and she kept chugging along. So like, it was so funny just to see the brutal honesty in the moment, because I don't really know that that's ever really been said just like on a hot mic like that
at an
LPGA event. I think that the uniqueness of it was what caught people off guard, but like major props to Lydia for just telling it how it is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I love the honesty there. There's no other way. You can't sugarcoat that anyway. And again, I don't think you need to. I don't think there's anything wrong with being honest in that situation and being like, yeah, it's my period and my back gets tight during that time.
So. I'm really like, I got to say, in the last like year or two, I've really been coming around on Lydia Ko a lot. You know, we kind of threw her off to the side after she had the teenage phenom stage where her career quieted off a little bit. We quickly realized as she started to get back in the winner's circle and be back in contention, like, she's a Hall of Fame contender. She's been on tour for like close to a decade, which still blows our mind. But we're definitely Team Lydia Ko, especially after seeing those remarks.
We are indeed. We're also still arguably Team Tiger Woods, even after everything that's happened to him over his storied career. You're probably one of the biggest Tiger fans out there right now. But even you thought that the drone footage of Tiger playing at Southern Hills might have been a bit much.
Yeah, listen, I don't profess to having a gigantic following on Twitter, but I will say every once in a while I have a tweet that picks up a little steam, and there's comments and likes and tweets and thoughts from the golf world. And the tweet was very simple that gained a little momentum last week on my feed at Course of Life 1. It was the drone shot of not the drone, the helicopter over Southern Hills, like zooming in on Tiger hitting practice putts 3 weeks before a major championship. And at that moment, I decided, as much as I love stalking Tiger Woods and following his every move, I think the helicopter shot for the Tuesday practice round might be a bit too much. That seemed to resonate with a lot of like realistic golf fans out there who have a brain. So as much as I'm enjoying the hype as we head into these majors, I don't think we needed to go that far at this point.
I don't think we do there. I also want to ask the question, do we think it was too much for Tiger getting what looked to be a personalized tour of the course with the course superintendent? Was
yes.
that... Come on.
And great segue too, because you know who chimed in about that, who we mentioned here on the past in the podcast, thank you for bringing this up, Mike, is Use Golf Facts, aka the burner account for Justine Reed, Patrick Reed's wife, who has gone off many a times at things that she doesn't like, whether it's rules gaffes or Patrick Reed getting a crappy draw in a major. Use Golf Facts chimed in big time on Twitter. So go find that reply if you haven't seen it out there. But she had lots of choice words for Tiger and the pro at Southern Hills talking through the scoring book. So you're not alone in that take, Mike. I love that.
Yeah. It's, I mean, whatever. Whatever. Let's talk about
you. Shout out to you and Justine Reed being in the same camp. That's a new one. I like that.
Probably never going to happen again. Let's go ahead and talk about the Wells Fargo Championship coming up this weekend. It is at Not Quail Hollow.
Yes, No Quail Hollow. No Michael Jordan Tiger Woods practice round like we used to see back in the day when we were younger in North Carolina there. That was nice. But yeah, not Quail Hollow. So no North Carolina for the Wells Fargo. Feels very strange to say, but it's an off year this year.
Yeah, and they're taking it off because Quail Hollow will be hosting the President's Cup in the fall. Yep. So I guess for whatever reason, they can't host two events in the same year. I don't know.
We don't want to give away any U.S. secrets. I was trying to think about this. Is that what we're doing?
Hasn't Pebble Beach hosted two events, like a major and their regular event ever sometimes? Come on. That's just kind of dumb. Instead, it'll be at TPC Potomac at Evanel Farm in the D.C. area. So we're going to have Capital Golf going on. Got a good looking field there. Rory McIlroy, Matt Fitzpatrick, Finau will get a chance to play second once again out there as well. And hot guy out there on tour, Keegan Bradley. Look out for him. He's
definitely
in the field
too. Better than Laxey's field for sure. And good to see Rory tee up. Check out runyourpool.com for my blog article where you can see all of my picks on this week's event specifically. But I would say minimum of at least five or six shots overhead of the U.S. Capitol and the Washington Monument.
At
right?
least.
I can picture Jim Nance talking over that background for sure. And there'd definitely be an interesting storyline to watch, because the reason why this course actually lost a PGA Tour event is because so many players complained about the conditions and the playing design of it all. So I'm curious to see what happens. The players come back here for the first time in 4 years. This has been kind of a filler spot course for PGA Tour events that need to move temporarily. So we'll see how the venue fares this week.
Can we just take a moment? You've now hit a nerve for me about tour players complaining about a course being difficult. You're the best players in the world. You're supposed to be challenged, and you're annoyed that a course is challenging you. It's like the guys that complain that Augusta is unfair.
Yep, and here's the beauty of that, Mike. the course went ahead and listened and made the greens easier. They just bent right over and made the course easier to listen to everyone.
The whole point of like Augusta being difficult is that if it's a shot maker's course, all these courses, if you don't hit the shot in the right place, you're going to get penalized.
Yeah, we'll see if that's on display this week. We'll see if there's any player frustrations on social media. We'll be looking out for that as the week goes on.
Too bad John Rahm isn't going to be in the field to complain about the course, because yes, we know he likes to do that.
He's busy celebrating his win.
Yes. Let's switch over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. I have discovered the new HBO Max series. There's a lot of good stuff on HBO Max, by the way.
I see that, yeah.
Hashtag come sponsor us, HBO Max.
Yeah.
Julia. About Julia Child.
Oh, the legend,
the OG. She invented the cooking shows we know and love now. Really, she did. And this is about her, not her kind of becoming Julia Child or becoming, you know, in love with cooking like we typically see a lot of stories. This is more kind of behind the scenes, her dealing with fame and like trying to make the show work without knowing anything about television. So it's a very different look at Julia Child. I really like it. It's really good. I got like two episodes left on the season, I think. So
she's one of those figures that will just stick with us, because just a seminal figure of our childhood. You flip on WGBH or your PBS affiliate, wherever you are on a Saturday, you see Julia Child. That was part of our childhood.
Yep, exactly.
I'm on to the final season of a show that I feel like has been going on for eons now. Better Call Saul, the spinoff of Breaking Bad, is in its final season. I call the show the most diva-like show in all of television. There's only been like three or four seasons. They take like 2 or 3 years in between every season, Mike. They came back for this final season with a 2.5 hour season premiere.
Oh, geez.
The show knows absolutely no bounds, but Nacho's been on the run. Gus Fring has returned in a big way. And I'm hearing there might be a little Walter White tie-in coming towards the end. So regardless, I'm still a fan, even though they really play with my emotions and they never release any episodes. It's great to have Better Call Saul back for one more run.
All right, let's get into this week's guest. If you've been following along with us, and really you should be, you know that we're on a bit of a holy moly run right now. We've done three holy moly participants in the last 2 weeks. We interview almost everyone that goes through holy moly as a whole. It
almost
seems
like we're building up to something, right?
Yeah, it feels like that, because this week we're taking a break from the contestants and we're going into the broadcast booth. That's right, because the season 4 premiere is coming up this Tuesday, May 3rd. That's the day this episode is released.
It's here. And you can, it's ABC or Hulu. It's now as you listen.
I just want to take a moment to say that this was, I'm just so excited that this whole thing has kind of fallen into our lap, because really it did. Alex, how much work did we put into getting Joe Testarossa on the show?
Absolutely none. The powers that be found us, connected us to Joe, and made this conversation happen. They knew how huge of fans we were of the series, and who better to have in honor of season four ever getting going than Joe Testarossa, the man in the booth himself, to break it all down.
That's right. And we'll get to that conversation in just a moment, but let's talk about our favorite golf ball out there on the course. It's the Volvic XT Soft. The company known for yellow golf balls should also be known for making great golf balls. The XT Soft is a three-piece tour-ready golf ball. It'll give you explosive distance and accurate greenside control. And of course, it'll stick out. You won't need to worry which ball is yours in the middle of the fairway, because yours will be the one that's bright yellow. And that's what I love to play with, because I don't want to have to think. I just want to look and see which ball is mine out there on the course. Volvic is the number one brand in golf balls with color, and the manufacturer of both that XT Soft and the Vivid. The Vivid is the number one matte finish ball in golf, and you can get the Vivid in a multi-pack, multiple colors. So you can have different colored balls to match your shirt and socks, and you can be completely and utterly coordinated out there on the course. And we know how important it is to feel confidence there on the course, Alex. So you can head on over to Volvic's website. It's VOLVIK.com. They've got balls, merchandise, towels, accessories for the course. They've also got some really cool collectibles and great golf gift ideas for the golfer or collectible fan of any age in your life. So again, head on over to Volvic.com. It's performance in color.
Next up on the tee, he's an award-winning broadcaster for ABC and ESPN. He's called some of the biggest prize fights and some pretty big bouts in college and pro sports throughout the years. I know he's as amped as I am for season forever of Holy Moly on ABC. Joe Testarossa joining the Course of Life. Joe, how are you doing today?
Good, Alex. How are you? Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for taking time in your busy schedule. I know you're all over fight season right now, and I know you just came from a crazy scene at Wembley. You were in London, Tyson Fury reclaiming his title. What one word or thought to describe how crazy the scene was there?
I was with an ESPN and ABC crew that has done everything from literally the executive producer of that broadcast did the Open for many years, so your audience would appreciate that, and is the producer of Thursday and Friday of the Masters. Everybody that worked that crew has done college football playoff, every major bowl there is, every major fight there is, Grand Slam tennis, Final Fours, you name it, they've done it. And when we returned to the production office back at the hotel, it was without argument that it was the loudest event anybody on that ESPN ABC crew had ever worked. And you're talking about guys that have been on the road for 25 years. You could not talk to the person standing next to you. 94,000 roaring British boxing fans never all day long.
Yeah, raucous to say the least. That was quite a scene, and you were there to cover it all. You've been covering fights for a long time at ESPN, professionally broadcasting. I'm curious, though, you know, the opportunity for you to then branch out and do college and pro sports from there. How did that path progress for you from being the fight guy to extending your experience across the world of sports?
Boxing has always been a part of my life and broadcasting, but it was never just the primary part of my life. So my career started because of football, actually. So football's always been a part of my life. Those are the two sports that have never left me. Every year I've been a broadcaster, but I've done everything. You know, I was the host of the Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup horse racing when we had it on ABC for years.
Yeah. I was going to ask about that.
All for years. And everything from 20 years ago doing the World Arm Wrestling Championships to, you know, the Monday Night Football and the NFL playoffs. So, and two of the international broadcasts of Super Bowls. So, I've been very blessed in my life to have a lot of opportunities. I never thought that this act of my career would get so much attention for doing comedic acting as a part of a doubles team with Rob Riggle and playing a straight man. So here we are.
Yeah, it is very interesting to see you kind of toe the line. You do it in a very interesting way. Well, let's talk about that real quick.
I don't know it much.
Yeah, yeah. How do you? Yeah, you say you don't toe it much. How does that line get blurred, and how quickly did that get blurred? Kind of when you got introduced to what the format was going to be for Holy Moly versus a traditional game you're broadcasting.
Yeah, and we're just embellished and exaggerated forms of our real selves when Rob and I go on the set. As Holy Moly has gone on, I think, you know, more and more we would describe it as almost characters we're playing, even though they're just embellished versions of ourselves. I prep Holy Moly like I'm prepping any sporting event. I sit there in my trailer nonstop and prepare the background stories, the bio information, everything about each individual player. Rob sits there and goes out there just to have a blast. And I join in the fun. And he's been a wonderful teacher and mentor when it comes to how to do the buddy comedy stuff and how to be the straight man and how to do the tee-ups and how to give the facial expressions. And he's wonderful. He's a master at improv. He's a master at sketch comedy. Obviously, all the movies he's been in for years and years, he always steals every scene. Whether it's The Hangover or The Other Guys,
yes,
or Step Brothers. So he just now is doing it on Holy Moly. And we have a wonderful friendship. I mean, we are the closest of friends. And we hope that that comes through on the broadcast when we flip the switch and become those two guys in the Gold Blazers.
I love that. I was going to ask, you know, you talk about, you know, how well the chemistry works between the two of you. Let's talk about what percentage of stuff really, you know, you put the prep work in. What percentage really is scripted versus how often are we just seeing stuff that's off the cuff and you and Rob freestyling at your best? No,
absolutely. Very, very little is scripted.
We may have
some scripting for here's how we'd like you to get on the air. Here's how we'd like you to introduce the rules, introduce the format of the whole, how a whole plays. But I would tell you 90-something% of what you see on Holy Moly is happening from 2 a.m. till 5:30 a.m. And it's when we are sleep deprived and we are, deep into the night and you can tell.
Yes, everyone always talks about the frigid mountain weather there when they're filming as well, too, on set. So the elements are definitely at play when you're broadcasting, I see.
Yeah, well, very much. Yes, very much.
Joe Tessitore, host of ABC's Holy Moly, but award-winning broadcaster in his own right. Like I said, you said at the top, you've done everything in the world of sports. I'm curious, a few unique takes that you have. Obviously, one of the legends of broadcasting, you got to work alongside Dickie V, calling hoops with him. He's obviously been through an unbelievable fight in recent years and love getting updates from the amazing fight he's still going through. But talk to me about the experience that you got to have calling hoops with him.
Well, we're going to actually see him this coming Friday is his gala and his cancer fundraiser. I relate to Dick Vitale in the way that as many Italian Americans, because of our unique personalities that are forged with our culture of being the incredible intensity and passion that he has for what he does. And that's something that you know, I take great pride in is if I'm going to do something, it's because I really connect with it. My passion shows through the intensity of the prep and the way I broadcast. I think, you know, there are certain delivery styles that aren't for everybody, but when it's sincere and authentic, it is for everybody. And that's been the case with Dick Vitale for now 4 decades. So, you know, his fight is something that we've all been rooting on and we're happy to see where he is with it. So many of our colleagues at ESPN who have been dear friends of mine have gone through the similar fight, and he's honored them, and he's honoring one of them this coming Friday in Sarasota, Florida, and that's Rod Gilmore, who's one of the most brilliant broadcasters, also a practicing attorney in the Bay Area, former Stanford football player and longtime college football analyst. Holly Rose, my longtime sideline reporter, who is also a survivor. So, you know, it's been an honor just to work with all of them and see them win that fight and knock out cancer.
That's awesome. I look forward to hearing about that gala as well, too. Have a great time there. It'll be good to see him. Tell me a little bit about the horse racing coverage. I know it's been a bit for you, but covering the Belmont and the Breeders had to have been quite a treat. It's really cool to go and attend horse racing specifically, one of those underrated sports that I would highly encourage a fan to see. What are your favorite memories? And specifically, what do you love most about horse racing coverage, which is a little bit of a different animal versus football or basketball?
I grew up with the horse racing. I grew up in an Italian-American family in an Italian neighborhood in Schenectady, New York.
Oh, yeah.
And the biggest deal for my family, my nine aunts and uncles, my grandparents, all my cousins, was going to the Saratoga racetrack, was driving just a little bit north of Saratoga and being railbirds. You know, we knew how to read the racing form by the time we were in first grade. And it was the language of our family of who do you like in the early double? What did the trifecta pay? You know, who do you like in the Derby? What do you like there? So, you know, for years and years of my life, horse racing was ever present. Now it becomes something that's a family getaway and just quality time spent when we're together in the summertime or wherever we could be, because I'm traveling the world so much with everything that I do. But Saratoga, New York, is really the foundation to being a sports fan for me. And in the 1970s, rooting for or against Angel Cordero and Eddie Maple and, everything. I was a toddler on my father's lap when Secretariat lost after he won the Triple Crown to a horse named Onion.
Wow.
That was spectacular bid in the 70s and affirmed at Aladar. That's my childhood, you know, and then being a professional broadcaster to broadcast those major races, to do the Belmont with Big Brown coming up short of winning the Triple Crown in 2008 with 125,000 fans there and being the host on ABC. You can imagine what a thrill that was for me. So I miss the sport on our network, but the folks over at NBC do a wonderful job with it.
Very cool. Yeah, you've had the privilege of being in some unbelievable sports atmospheres, not competition aside, just the crowds themselves. I'm curious, having the perspective of being at big scale college football games or where you were in London or a massive scale horse race, what's truly maybe the biggest pop you've ever heard? You know, the truly loudest, most raucous crowd. Was it there in London that you just saw a week ago?
Alex, it's interesting that you asked me that this week. Because if you asked me prior to the Tyson Fury Wembley Stadium fight, I would have told you, oh, that's impossible to answer. I've done years and years of SEC football. And I'm doing a night game at LSU or Bama or the Swamp when they were in their prime or Georgia, you know, how could I possibly answer that? I can answer that. The 16 minutes of the ring walk of Tyson Fury through God Save the Queen by Laura Wright, the opera singer. And then the moment of the knockout punch lasting for another 5 minutes of every replay being shown. I've never heard a pop like that. I've never. It was beyond anything. And my voice is still affected by trying to broadcast over 94,000. I've done football games, many, many football games, with 102,000 to 108,000 people at them. I've done whiteouts at Penn State against Michigan, 4 overtimes on ABC. I've done Bama, Florida. I've done many games with over 100,000 people. There was no sound, a tidal wave of sound like I heard with Tyson Fury fighting at Wembley Stadium.
Amazing. Yeah, you're definitely the foremost authority for that question. So I appreciate the answer. And that was quite a treat to see. Again, we're with Joe Testor, host of ABC's Holy Moly. So switching stages to a crazy stage on a whole other level. Holy moly. The Steph Curry produced Madhouse of Mini Golf. We have featured so many electric personalities on the show. I'm curious. Let's go ahead and tease our audience for what we can get excited for season 4 ever. I know we've got some celebrity cameos in the form of the Muppets appearing, but what can we look forward to this upcoming season?
I don't know that I'm allowed to say the celebrity cameos outside of the Muppets, but the Muppets seems commercial break on ABC right now, which is a lot of fun. It was a blast to work with Kermit up in the booth.
Love it.
Was a blast to film a lot of segments with Miss Piggy and with everybody else. Wriggle, I think what you'll see in season 4, first of all, you're going to see dynamic holes. We have new holes. We have great competition. The golf, the the golfers get better and better every year. The actual skill that you're seeing out there putting, you're more and more skilled players every year. You get really good athletes. The challenges that we put them through, the holes, will blow your mind. I mean, you know, you're getting high velocity, you're getting big drops, you're getting, you know, thunderous plops into the water. Our producers are getting more and more creative. But the other thing that you get with Holy Moly is you get a story arc. And that's what you get this year. You get the story arc with Rob Riggle saving Holy Moly and asking a favor of the Muppets to do so. So the Muppets play a huge role. It was quite interesting in all my years of broadcasting to sit there for hours in a three-man booth, and the third man between me is a frog. And there would be, you know, many moments where we're in downtime and I'm sitting there and say, hey, who needs a water? You need a water, Kermit? You good with water? And I'm talking to Kermit the Frog as if it's just casual and nothing is to be made of it.
Yeah, that's a big deal. Yeah, that's a big one for sure. Definitely a feather to add to your broadcasting cap. So very exciting stuff for Holy Moly. Let's get to some quick shots with Joe Tessitore here on Course of Life. Let's talk about maybe the golf side of Holy Moly. We featured some amazing golf moments from our friends of the show, Tanner Beard, who won the 250,000. Yeah. Mae Brennan, our friend of the show, had an immaculate, unbelievable hole in one. Yeah. I'm sure there's some amazing golf coming in season four. Am I wrong?
No, there is incredible golf coming, and there's incredible, you know, feats of athleticism with the obstacle course versions of these holes as well. I think where you see really incredible golf is how many of the golfers, especially when it comes to miniature golf, can read a hole and play angles and consider things that you really have to consider with the hole design here. And you'll see more of that this year. But yes, there is incredible golf. I thought Tanner's performance, May's performance, you know, we've been seeing this coming where you're going to get that level and you see more and more of that this year.
Very exciting. All right, let's transition because I got to get some college football questions in for you. I know you are always a foremost authority on all things Heisman. Let's go with maybe a way too early prediction for who might be or who might be the winner of the 2022 Heisman.
Well, I think the guy who should have won the Heisman last year, Will Anderson, the edge rusher from Alabama, it probably took that year of everybody being slapped on the back and saying, will you please open your eyes, to realize that he's the most dominant player in college football. Alabama's going to be extraordinarily talented this year. Obviously, they have the Heisman Trophy winner returning at quarterback. They have Jahmyr Gibbs at running back. And he would be my X-factor outlier of Heisman winner, would be the running back transfer from Georgia Tech, who is lightning fast, ridiculously fast. I think the SEC West is, as it often is, a dominant division, but I think it's going to be even more difficult. And yet I think Alabama is going to run the table there. And when they get to that championship game, they're going to meet an undefeated Georgia team who's going to get better as the year goes on. Obviously, five first round picks last night, an all-time great defense. But they have a player who may be the best of them all playing defensive tackle in Jalen Carter. So it's going to be a very interesting year in the SEC, where I think the national championship will be won. Ohio State is returning a lot of talent. The interesting week one against Notre Dame. Oregon's returning talent. But I really think the two best teams are the two best teams that played for it all last year, and that's Alabama and Georgia, which is often the case in college football, isn't it?
Yep, it is. Yeah, would not be surprised if we get that run back for sure. So we'll hold that prediction up for the next several months and see what happens. Really cool college football moment I got to ask about, which has been circulated over the last year or so, is obviously having the opportunity to call your son's game when he played for Boston College. Yeah. The sequence of the amazing fake field goal where he drew the defense offside and the TD to follow. Right. I know there'd been one iteration of you seeing that before from your son. Could you tell that maybe that moment was going to happen that day, or did it really take you by surprise?
No, it took me by surprise, and it shouldn't have, because you think that your own child would tell you what the game plan is, Alex, but he didn't. We still laugh about that to this day. It's a thrill of a lifetime. It's very difficult when you broadcast. I'm sure if you talk to Mike Tirico or Al Michaels or Jim Nance or Joe Buck or any of us that have been so blessed to do this at the network level for so long. Now, Al may be different because he had Do You Believe in Miracles? But I think it's very difficult to say, hey, what's your favorite play you ever called? What's your favorite moment you ever called? And for me, it's not difficult. It's just not difficult. You know, your son is playing the number one team in the country and Clemson on ABC and they're undefeated and he goes out and, you know, an upset-minded team goes up by 18 points after he pulls off a fake field goal. It's something that we'll be able to have for the rest of our lives. And it's a small little play in the annals of college football, but for some reason, because of the father-son connectivity mostly, it has touched so many people, probably more than anything in my career. It's the one thing people will approach me with and say, I loved that. People always say, we just loved that moment. And I would go back to the words I used earlier about Dick Vitale's presentation and his offense, his intensity and passion being so authentic. It was authentic that, you know, the feelings came through and the shock came through. And it's undoubtedly the favorite moment of my broadcasting career.
Yeah, and a credit to your professionalism in the moment, too. You could have said so much more, but you kept it just a tessitore. So I appreciate you in the moment.
Yeah, I called him by his last name. Truth be told, Alex, it comes across that way now, but I didn't know what the hell to do. I did what I normally do and just professionally called it.
Nice. Love it. Joe, we love to end all of our interviews with our 19th hole question presented by our friends at Links Drinks. The question being, when you end a long day, whether it's on the golf course or broadcasting or just when you get home, what is like your go-to meal and drink that you love to order?
Well, my drink would be tequila. And, you know, it would be probably a glass of Azul on a single sphere of ice. A lot of times a Blanco, but if I had a really, really good Añejo, which when I get off, I've been on the road for 2 weeks, and when I get home Sunday down to Naples, Florida, by the way, the home of so many beautiful golf courses, as you know.
Beautiful place. Yeah, man. I've spent time in Marco Island every year of my life. What a gorgeous place that is.
Yeah. So I'll be, you know, taking in those views. I'm eyeing a Casa Dragones Añejo right now. I actually mentioned that to my wife. I just want to sit back and sip on that. In terms of a meal, you know, I grew up the son of an Italian immigrant, Schenectady, New York, and everybody in my family are phenomenal cooks. But, you know, the one thing I love is I love Italian cured meats. So if you have some beautiful thinly sliced prosciutto di Parma, some prosciutto, I would probably sit back and sip tequila and have that, or some hard sausage sliced up, some salsiccia. I would have that.
Nice, simple and sophisticated. Love it. All right, again, it's Holy Moly. It's Tuesdays, ABC 8/7 Central, and it's Joe Testor and Rob Riggle saving Holy Moly with the help of the Muppets. Joe, thank you so much for hopping on The Course of Life. I really appreciate it.
Man, I hope they do save Holy Moly. That would be horrible if Holy Moly didn't make it. So let's hope the Muppets can do that.
Be a shame. Thanks, Joe.
All right, be well.
And we're back. Great chat there with Joe. Alex, you're just becoming a regular David Letterman or Jay Leno. You're just getting to talk to everybody now. Yeah, the question is now whether we can get the Muppets on the show because, you know, they and Rob Riggle, see if they are going to be able to save Holy Moly this season.
I mean, really, the only way we get Kermit on is if Holy Moly is saved. So we're going to have to tune into season 4 Tuesday nights on ABC to figure that out. But excited to see the Muppets in action, bringing their commentating to the booth with Joe, who seemed very excited to spend just hours upon hours in the booth with Kermit. That was really cool to hear him recount that experience. And Mike, I love the answer to that question about just the biggest pop in sports. You think if there's anyone to ask about a loud crowd in a sports setting, it'd be Joe. And that energy at London, at Wembley,
Mike, 94,000 screaming boxing fans at Wembley.
It's just crazy.
I can't even imagine. I mean, he says it didn't even compare to an SEC stadium. That's all you need to know in terms of noise.
Yeah, right there. There you go. Yeah. There you go. And if you like that chat with Joe, plus all the other things we do here, plus we have really exciting guests lined up that are just as awesome as Joe. And I'm really not trying to just like pump us up. No, they're just as good as Joe. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, COL Podcast, Course of Life Alex, and MWRINC. Subscribe to us on your podcast app of your choice. Make sure you give us a rating as well. Let us know we're doing a great job. You can find us on Twitter as well, where we're having the majority of our conversations outside of the show. He's at Course of Life 1. I'm at MWRINC.
Nice. Let's hit some sports tidbits right now. Where do we want to go first? Basketball, baseball, football? What do we think?
Let's start on a high note for you, and we'll end on a low note for you. We're going to go that way. Okay. So let's start with the Celtics, because they're going to beat the Bucks, right?
I mean, I hope so. It looks like it's now going to take 6 or 7 games for sure. But obviously, coming off the sweep of Kyrie and the Nets, that was amazing. Not quite cherry on top. There's a lot of work to be done, but that was a fun start to the playoffs for Celtics fans. But rudely awoken in game one by the defending champion Bucks. So it's going to take a much longer series than 4 games, but bleeding green here for at least another week or so.
Let's talk football as well, because as we all know, it was the draft this past weekend. How'd your Patriots do? What do you think? You happy? You not happy?
So
what do you
think? Literally drafted a guy with the last name Strange in the first round, and it was a very strange pick. So there was no pun at all. It lended itself to that moment. Outside of the first round pick, I love it, Mike. We got the fastest wide receiver in the draft, Tyquan Thornton. We got a lot of bolstering on defense. We got some cornerbacks. So overall, I gave him a B+, a pretty good draft. And I got to say, Mike, this is usually where I turn and start dumping on the Giants draft, but I'm not going to this year. Did you have any takeaway thoughts? Because I think the Giants did pretty well this year as well.
Yeah, that's what I'm reading. Of course, my football knowledge is minimal coming from the college ranks, and I always have a very pessimistic view of my New York football Giants.
Yeah.
But everything coming out says that the Giants actually had a good draft. They did not draft a quarterback. So we're all in right now. I don't know why, but we're all in. But it sounds like we made some pretty good picks, and we did get a wide receiver. So, you know, that happened.
They did. Best pass rusher in the draft, Kayvon Thibodeau. Best, maybe arguably best offensive lineman in the draft, Evan Neal. You started right there. You got a bunch of beef for the line as well to protect things on both sides of the ball. So nice job by both of our teams in the draft. Obviously, we know how little that ends up meaning months and years from now. At least we can be excited for the moment, though.
Because where was Tom Brady in the draft when he was drafted?
That's right, like round 6, pick 199. Yep. Never forget.
Yep, there you go. Let's talk a little baseball, because I just want to gloat and dump on your parade about how the Yankees are the best team in baseball as of this Monday evening that we're recording, May 2nd. And your Red Sox are one of the worst.
Struggling. Yeah, struggling to say the least. Just late inning pitching has been super unreliable. Opponent walked off this past weekend on a walk-off error throw from the pitcher throwing to third base. So like that's how Red Sox losses are ending now these days. So not a great April by any stretch of the imagination. We all know how this turns around in past years, and we have documented and diatribed this in the past few seasons. So I'll let you have your fun right now. You're going into Cinco de Mayo with the division lead. We'll talk again on Memorial Day.
We will indeed. But for now, let's hashtag always end with food.
Yes, brought to you by our friends at Toasty Bites, makers of the Toasty Super Bites, Pops, and a whole lot more snacks. They're healthy. They're great on the go. We love them. Toasty.com/COL, promo code COL20. I'll go with the WADA before you go with the water. I got a Whataburger review. Yep. And I know this is killing you because you love it when I talk about Whataburger in your face.
I love Whataburger. I love Whataburger. Love it.
It's love the it. New Southern bacon chicken sandwich, which they're advertising all over the place. So I could have gone fried, but I got it grilled. But basically, they're kind of playing a little bit off your kind of classic Southern chicken Chick-fil-A-ish sandwich. It's got some bacon, some crunchy slaw, some Wada Southern sauce, and it's an absolute thing of beauty. I'm going to go 8.5 out of 10 on the new sandwich from Whataburger.
Well, you know, Whataburger is expanding. They're putting a bunch of locations in the Atlanta area,
okay,
which is
getting closer.
Still closer to me to go down just over the border into Jacksonville to go to the one random Whataburger that's over there. But they're coming closer to me.
They're circling the wagons. I like it.
Yeah, exactly. And while you're eating Whataburger, I was enjoying the first watermelon of the season because, you know, I think I bring this up almost every year now. This is a big time of year when you get that first watermelon and it's just, you know, that perfect texture and sweetness and juicy, and it's just like, you know, it's going to be hot, and I think it's supposed to be 90 on Thursday here in Savannah, so it's going to be hot, but watermelon is back in season.
Big time sign of the season food. You know, when it's there, you just know exactly what time of year it is. You have that endless image in your head of the warm weather barbecue with the grill and the burgers and the potato salad and the corn. There's that slice of watermelon sitting right on the side of the plate. Like, that's just quite a vibe, and I'm glad we're here at watermelon season.
Me too. I am.
Awesome. That's a wrap on this week's Course of Life. Like Mike said, if you thought this was a big episode, just wait until next week. Be sure to hit that subscribe button right now. Like, comment, and let us know your thoughts on social. Until then, we'll see you next week.